Hey there, Zlatko here. Welcome to What Is My Brain podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I get the opportunity to chat with fellow founders and business operators about their journey and how they got to where they are now, where they are going, and how they're going to get there. I'm planning on bringing guests and touching on topics such as running multiple businesses, executing ideas, and just spitballing about random topics and current events. It's a casual conversation, and that will hopefully bring value to anyone that decides to listen. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for tuning in.
All right, here we go. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. I know I reached out to you kind of out of the blue on Twitter and was like, I said, I saw your post somewhere or somebody posted about your brand. And I was just super intrigued by what you guys were doing. And I want to get to know a little bit more about you, share your story, and kind of go from there. So I want to sort of flip the mic over to you, give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, what you're up to, your, you know, anything you want to share with whoever might be listening. So I want to just give you the floor for a little bit and let me know what you're up to.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and for reaching out and for being interested in what we're up to.
Absolutely.
I'm Steph. Yeah, I'm Steph. I'm one of the co-founders for Guella Mushrooms and our product. Oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, sorry. My computer paused. Anyway, I'm Steph. I'm one of the co-founders for Guella Mushrooms and our product Mojo Microdose. We are a company that mimics the effects of a psilocybin microdose without any of the illegal ingredients. So we provide a mood lift, energy, and focus for 5+ hours, and we can be found, you know, in store, online, and on Amazon.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. So tell me a little bit about sort of that process of whatever you can share about not having the psilocybin in there and how you guys were able to do that and, you know, how the product's been doing and the brand's been doing and how long you've been around and all that good stuff.
That's a lot to cover.
Yeah. Little by little.
Yeah. So we've been around for about 3 years. We were a COVID baby. Previously used to build greenhouses in the Arctic, working on food security issues, and found that I wanted to do something new, something different. And psychedelics had been a passion of mine for quite a long time. Same thing kind of with my co-founders. I mean, I guess they weren't working on food security, but they were also passionate about psychedelics, and we wanted to find a way to bring accessible psychedelics to communities. Of course, you know, currently microdosing isn't necessarily legal in, majority of the world. And so
right. We
actually used a previous formula from one of my co-founders, Daniel, who had created this formula when he was in university as a way to help him while he was still in school. So a natural study aid or so. He kept seeing everybody getting hooked on Adderall and he didn't want the same thing for himself. So he created version one of Mojo. When we met and, you know, when we started working together, we decided that we wanted to utilize this formula and tweak it a little bit to include the mood lift as well as the energy beyond just a pure focus tool. And that's what became Mojo Microdose. That's kind of our come up story and where we're at in terms of how we're doing as a company. Pretty well. We launched in 2021, October. So 2022 was our first full year in market. During that time, we blew up a little bit.
That's awesome.
We're mostly direct to consumer. But since then, we've also launched in store. We're in about 350 stores now across the US. We're also internationally distributed. Yeah. Our most recent launch in store was actually in Urban Outfitters across the US, which is like super cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm one of their customers. I love all their shit over there. So this is amazing.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I was actually pretty psyched because over the weekend, friends of mine sent me like screenshots. They were just shopping on the Urban Outfitters website and they're like, oh my God, it's your brand. Like it's on there. It's been pretty sweet in that sense. We've grown considerably. We're now internationally distributed, which is really cool. And we're just looking to grow. We actually just launched a limited time Libido gummy. By the time that you folks listen to this, it will not be on the website anymore. Today's the last day. But
sucks for all of you now.
Sucks for all of you. But we launched a new SKU for the month of February for Valentine's Day. And it's been, you know, really interesting learning about different use cases with different kind of tweaked versions of Mojo. But yeah, we're growing quickly and we're a pretty small team. So we're really proud of it.
That's amazing. So I want to kind of dig into a few things because I've done a D2C brand in the past in like 2015, and it was a sock subscription brand. And I know that, you know, one of our goals, and we were a lot smaller. So do you guys have any like funding? Do you guys raise funding, or is this all bootstrapped at the moment?
We did raise funding. We've done, I would say, like 2.5 rounds. One of them was a half. Okay. But yeah, we're friends and family backed. Now we're VC backed.
Oh, very awesome. Okay, cool. So explain to me really quickly the difference between Guela mushrooms and the Mojo microdose. Now, that two separate entities, or does one own the other? How does that whole thing work at the moment?
Guela is the parent company. So that's where we talk more about psychedelics very freely. We have a dosing calculator. We have a mushroom wiki. We, you know, it's psychedelics all day, every day on Guela. And we really like to think of it as a way to walk people through their psychedelic experiences. While Mojo is a product of Guela. So Guela is the parent, Mojo is the product. Awesome. It does have its own separate website. That way we don't get blocked on ads and stuff. But it's still a brand under Guela.
And what's your experience overall been in the past? I mean, you come from a little bit of a different world of, you know, getting a D2C brand on online and I mean, growing quickly. Obviously, I'm sure venture capital helped with the expansion and everything like that. But tell me a little bit more about that experience and what kind of team you have behind you to help you with all of these sort of components of this crazy online world with so many different, you know, apps on Shopify, marketing, you know, design, and all these different components that need to kind of come together to, you know, build what you guys built. I mean, I personally, one thing that attracted me, I come from an agency background, been running a Shopify agency for a very long time. It's, you know, the design and sort of the branding that you guys have was, I think, A1. So whoever came up with all of that, they deserve a lot of credit. But I just kind of want to know a little bit more about, you know, how you guys came about and what your, you know, what your experience with that is and how long it took, I guess, to get acquainted with it if you're not the person that was like doing all the little, pulling all the little strings and everything.
Yeah, I mean, when I say we're a small team, we really are. A lot of the original design was a previous co-founder who was a creative director and did a lot of the design. And then we ended up moving into working with an agency and then we brought it back in-house. Okay. So there's been several iterations of how we've gotten here. A lot of it has been trial by fire, like learning as we go, especially new to D2C, but also new to kind of almost like an illicit marketing area, I'd say. So there's been a lot of learning opportunities for the entire team. And, you know, with any type of startup, typically you have kind of phases of the startup where you require a variety of very specialized skills. And then, you know, you move on to the next phase and you have a bunch of other specialized skills that you require. Yeah. And so thankfully we've been surrounded by a group, a diverse group of specialists in D2C and marketing and design who have helped us get to where we are now. A lot of these people are kind of just Mojo community, I guess, since they aren't working on the brand currently, but they've helped us get to where we currently are. And again, a lot of the things that you need to know about running a D2C brand, whether that's the design aspect, the marketing aspect, the how to build the website and working Shopify aspect. Yeah. Honestly, it's been trial by fire. We've come to realize like, oh, like, have you heard about this opportunity? Or did we realize that we needed to do this thing? And it's like, okay, well, now that we know we need to do it, let's go do it. And then, you know, queue hours on hours on Slack and on Google, finding out what other people do to accomplish the same things.
Nice. That's awesome. And so what is your day-to-day role look like now in sort of this like brand that's just kind of exploded? And like I said, you guys got some funding and all these other things. Like, can you share anything about what the focus is going forward? And I also want to dig into, you know, what made you want to go the other way into retail? And do you guys feel like, you know, that's kind of the next move. But I just want to know what your day-to-day at the moment, you know, looks like within the business.
Yeah, so I'm COO. Okay. And so that's a million things every single day. For me specifically, I'm more of the, like, business development, finance, retail, sometimes IT. there's a variety of different things that I do, honestly, on a day-to-day basis. No day is the same as the next.
Which is beautiful in one way or another, right?
Yeah, I never get bored. It's always a new challenge. With that said, of course, it can be really daunting. Like today, all majority of my day was looking at U.S. sales tax and figuring out, you know, what we're going to do there. Especially as a Canadian entity. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Like this is super into the nitty gritty.
Hey, these are all part of the operations process. You gotta dial in on all of those things. It's crazy.
It's true. So yeah, but my day to day is pretty different. But in terms of like, what are we focusing on? Right now, product innovation. What do we have up the pipeline? What should we have up the pipeline based on consumer trends? Anywhere from use cases to flavors to, like, just what should we come out with and what's our capacity? We're a 4-person team, like, I guess 2.5. Yeah. And we're basically 4 people.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just like, what can we take on reasonably? At the same time, looking, you know, future looking, what are things that our customers want? Most of my January was spent doing customer outreach with and interviews and basically just asking people, like, what makes you want to come back? What doesn't make you want to come back? What should we come up with next? And so, yeah, and now it's just kind of implementing that, hence with like the libido gummy that we launched. We heard a bunch about that. We thought Valentine's Day was coming up, so we turned it around in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, that was quite the sprint. Yeah, we're just kind of looking forward looking right now. And you asked, why did we go retail? Honestly, a big thing right now is, I don't want to say post-COVID because I know a lot of people are still very much dealing with the effects of COVID. But in terms of, I guess, people being able to go out to stores locally, a lot of people are doing that. While, you know, the 2020 to 2022/2023 has really focused on D2C because people couldn't necessarily go in store, a lot of people are now switching back and wanting to actually feel what things look and feel and taste like in store. And so we wanted, in a way, while D2C is our bread and butter, we wanted a way to reach customers who are in store and, you know, learning about different and new products through that channel to be able to see Mojo on shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also feel like that's another lever of just seeing the brand and getting familiar with it, just like anything else, right? Whether you take the Apple of the world or whatever else it is, it's like having that physical location and having that experience of somebody walking into a, like you said, an Urban Outfitters and seeing, oh, like there's something about like mushrooms, you know what I mean? Like that's just whole, the questions that get asked actually end up expanding the brand. So I think that's super important. And so let me ask you about this. You guys said you're international. Have you guys run into a lot of, I guess, restrictions and legal things that prevented you from sort of going that wide? Because you said you don't have the actual ingredient of psilocybin in there, but you do have something that you guys have come up with. So I'd love to know, like, what were some of those challenges when you first started, and how did it work when you guys were just in Canada, for example?
So actually, we've only just been in the U.S. We're only entering Canada in March.
New. Sorry, I got it flipped then. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries at all. We get that a lot as a Canadian company. But right. With that said, there are so many international hurdles when you have a D2C brand or any brand, really. If people are eating your product, there's going to be regulations around that.
Right.
With that said, we have a partner that works out of the Middle East that actually does our product shipping. And so that's how we are able to ship internationally. We do not do wholesale internationally. So that is still a limitation that we're not planning on doing anytime soon. US and Canada are a big enough market for us right now to try and tackle. Most countries have their own restrictions around natural health products. And so, for example, for Canada, we actually had to wait a 12-month wait line to actually get our licensing to be able to do wholesale and direct-to-consumer sales. So I mean, that's why we don't do full international sales and wholesale, because there is that licensing that typically takes months on months, and it's generally pretty expensive. So for us, we're Canada and US wholesale only, but direct to consumer, we're international.
Oh, nice. And in terms of doing, you know, a lot of this out of the Middle East, was this at all a challenge for you guys to get the product right and all these other things? Was there like a lot of other obstacles of kind of tweaking that recipe and everything else that you guys have going on?
Only for Canada. For the rest of the world, we just offer Mojo as is. People, you know, can choose to buy it. They cannot choose to buy it. We don't advertise internationally at all. Okay. So yeah, if people find us because, you know, a friend in the US or Canada told them about it, all power to them. In general, for Canada, we did have to tweak our formula a bit. But funny enough, we actually found that customers preferred our Canada formula. And so we're thinking of using the Canada formula for the US. We've had to make a few tweaks, especially Canada. Oh my goodness. So for anybody who wants to launch in Canada, I just want you to know that the
big lesson English,
English to French translation kills you. Oh my gosh. Man. It kills you, especially because words that are the same in English and French, regardless, you have to have both. And for Canada, we have to have like this really long, I'm talking like multiple page long warning label that in the US you just don't have to have. And so it really kills your beautiful packaging. In mind. I know, me too. We're actually, thankfully, there is a way around that. You can have a QR code for certain parts of it. But in general, just like the English to French is just, especially if you have small packaging, it hurts.
Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that. And I can imagine. I was just, you know, as I was sort of scrolling through everything you guys were doing, you know, I felt like the legality side of things is always, are you guys having any trouble with like running ads? And I guess that leads me to the question of like, what sort of marketing channels have been working with you guys? Because I feel like a product like this, and I might be completely wrong, a product like this really does well in a community environment where, you know, if I try it and I like it, I tell the next person. What's been sort of the focus on marketing and actually what's been working rather than anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
Our main benefits are typically go against community guidelines.
Okay.
So we have to find new ways of talking about the benefits of Mojo. And then next thing we know, that, you know, the new innovative way we've come up with is now blocked. So it's just a constant like figuring out a way to talk about it. But you're right. We are very community based. People that try Mojo tell their friends about Mojo and it goes so forth and so on. So we've done a lot to do micro influencing in terms of micro sampling through a variety of different, you know, people who dig Mojo and offering products for content. We're still finicking that right now. We're figuring out a way to develop that opportunity a little bit better and make it bigger in 2023. But we have found that that's the best way to grow, in contrast to ads, which, I mean, we love, don't get us wrong, but it just sucks when you spend a bunch of cash on ads and then you get blocked. And then you're just like, you know, why did I do this? We're just in 2023 really focusing on how we can grow organically through community events and micro influencing.
Nice. That's awesome. And I'm assuming if you go to, you know, some of these big like conferences and all these other things, you guys obviously have the branding to stand out and, you know, all that stuff. So I'm sure those will all trickle down. Do you guys actually own the manufacturing of the product, or is that through a partner that you guys use?
Yeah, we are vertically integrated.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
I was going to mention, it's funny because you mentioned merchandising and that we actually don't have anything to show in person. Because, I mean, like we started off during the pandemic, right? So that wasn't a priority to like have cool booths or swag or anything really. When I've attended events, I just like bring Mojo with me. And I always feel like this like weird dealer, because at an after party, I'm like, do you want to try Mojo? You know? And so it's just like this ongoing, like we don't have anything yet. We are working on it. I am working I'm like meeting with some merchandising people later this week. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because we literally have nothing.
I love it. No, those are, I read something the other day that is like, those are just all the extra little bells and whistles. Like, you guys have already dialed in the product. You've done the hard work. All these extra little things are just, you know, a little added component. So I'm sure you'll definitely get there. Are you guys planning on expanding the team and really growing over this next couple of years? And then the other part of it is, I don't know about anybody, but obviously we don't have to go into depth about it, but do you guys, is this a pretty competitive market at the moment?
So on the front end, hiring, no, not for now.
Okay.
Will that change? Maybe. But right now we're trying to keep it.
One piece of advice, if you can, keep the team lean, keep it efficient. And if you have to hire contractors on a per project basis and then move forward, because honestly, from even just running an agency, it's a little bit different. But we got really, really bloated really quickly during the pandemic, and it hurt us in the long run. And now we've shrunk the team from 22 people down to 7 people. So one piece of advice is, if you don't have to hire, don't hire. Use contractors, pay them for the work, and move on. Because I think, especially at this stage when you guys are growing and doing all these things, a lot of the stuff out there you probably could get done with contractors without, you know, hitting your bottom line with a lot of extra expenses and stuff like that. So just one little piece of advice.
I totally agree. We actually just went through that in January.
Oh, you did.
Okay. I like to say, you have to scale down and scale up. And I love having a team. Like, I love,
of course,
having people to talk with, to bounce ideas off of. But as a startup founder, you do have to look at that bottom line, and you do have to recognize that sometimes that isn't necessarily possible. It's funny though, because it's like, I feel like I've learned that lesson really hard twice recently. But then also in my first company ever, my co-founder and I, we hired like 10 people at the time. And keep in mind, so we were still students, and this was a not-for-profit. So by hire, I mean we hired volunteers. And right, we had like 10 to 12 volunteers or something. And then we realized very quickly that we did not need any of them. Like, we were doing way better and being way more efficient just having ourselves. And so we ended up having to fire like 12 people. And one of my professors and my mentors at the time, he was just like, you didn't really fire them. You basically just asked them to stop paying in and out. And it stuck with me for the rest of like my entrepreneur career. Cause it's just, it's true. Like, you know, that is a huge lesson that I feel like everybody learns one way or another. You get so excited, you get higher happy when things are going well. And
right,
then you realize that like, it's just not suitable for the long-term growth of your company.
Exactly. And then also seeing some of these, you know, multi-billion dollar companies going through the same thing, it almost
in
a way doesn't make you feel as terrible, because you're like, oh, what did I do wrong? And it's like, no, all of these people did the same exact thing, and everyone's having to dial back now because they overhired, and they just, I mean, you don't know what you don't know type of thing. And at the time it seemed like a good idea. And but yeah, that's pretty crazy. So tell me about a little bit about your previous entrepreneurial, you know, career. Like, where did that all start from? Is that something that you were always passionate about, like building your own business, and you know, you started early on, or was this something recent that happened over the past like few years that really like sparked something within you?
That's a great question. I'm an immigrant. I think that's a great place.
Where are you
to start
from,
there,
if I may ask you? Where are you from?
Oh yeah, I'm from Venezuela.
Oh, Venezuela. Okay, awesome, awesome.
Yeah. So, both my parents are engineers. And somehow both my brother and I ended up with the entrepreneurial spirit. I think a lot of it is like just not necessarily wanting to succeed, but needing to. That
right,
kind of like hustle culture was really ingrained in us as like when we were very young. We moved through 4 countries before we landed in Canada.
I have a very similar story, so we can get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, each one has like its own challenges, and you kind of have to rise above in order to survive. I started my first company when I was like a kid. I started off with I think it was newspaper delivery, and that wasn't me starting it, that was me finding a job at like very young age. My first company that I actually ran was a design business when I was 15 and 16, and then I had it until I was about 18 or so, where I just developed, you know, I did design work and coding work for a variety of different like small to medium sized businesses, helped pay for, you know, the extras in high school. Then I got to university. I moved away from home, and I realized that I wanted friends. I'm a super extroverted person. I get my energy from people. And so I had to join something, right? Like I met this person who was just like, you have to join this club. And I did. And the club at the time, I had zero interest in it, but I was just like, people that seem to like me, like I'm going to hang out here. And it was building social ventures around the world. And so I ended up doing beekeeping and microloans in Kenya. Then I started a water project in India. Then I started my first real company, because it was the biggest one, was Green Igloo, where I focused on food security and food sovereignty in Canada's Arctic, which then it got bigger. Then we moved beyond the Arctic and went into more desolate areas. So there were places in Ontario, BC, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in terms of your question, like, was it the entrepreneurial spirit? I feel like it's just kind of always been there. And I've always just kind of followed passions I was interested in. With my first company, the pandemic hit, and I realized that I had become this like person who didn't have a personality outside of my role. And that wasn't who I wanted to be. And so I really focused on figuring out like, what other passions did I have? What did I want to do? What did I want to be when I grew up? You know, like that question you have to kind of ask yourself. And I landed on psychedelics with the help of friends and some shrooms. And here we are 3 years later.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And I, for myself, and, you know, whoever is listening to this, you know, do your own research. Like, everyone's got to do their own thing about what you're putting into your body and all this other stuff. This is not any kind of, you know, advice or anything, but I myself have really seen a lot of benefits from it, microdosing and all these other things. And so, you know, to each his own at the end of the day, but I think that a lot of people, I always lean on the side of like natural medicine and holistic stuff rather than going into like the pharmaceutical things and, you know, all of that. So, for me, it's been doing a lot. I went through some, you know, mental health stuff in the past and, you know, all that stuff. So, but yeah, it's a big thing. And for me being extroverted and, you know, all of these things you just said, it really, really clicked because I've been itching to get to like some sort of big event, some sort of big conference, you know, whether it's around e-commerce stuff or whatever it might be, is just being around people gives me energy. And that's one of the reasons, honestly, Stephanie, is like, I feel like this podcast that I do and I get to shine a little bit of light on, you know, it's not a big light, but it's a light on fellow founders and different things, is just getting to know people and getting to connect with them on a different basis and seeing what they're up to, how they do things, and just seeing their journey. Because like you said, you're an immigrant, went through four countries. My family did the same thing, from Eastern Europe to Germany to the US and all these other things. And so some of these stories are really, really awesome. And I feel like if anybody does listen to it, hopefully it gives them a little bit of that spark, that little inspiration to, you know, chase whatever they're doing. And now the internet's so damn wide open, you can start anything literally almost for free. And I hope that, you know, pushes people over into that category and try something for themselves, no matter what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I always like to say there's never going to be a perfect time. You know, exactly. Whenever I feel like when entrepreneurs are like, oh, I have this idea, I really want to do it. And they're just like, okay, well, I need to do more research into this, or I need to find a good name because the other handles are taken, or, you know, like there's just always a but. And it's just, there's never going to be a good time. The best way to start is to start today, even if that's telling somebody just your idea, like get it rolling, start to hold yourself accountable, you know?
I swear, I feel like you just read a bunch of like my Twitter posts and you just repeated what I said. No joke. Like that's my absolute story, is just, I didn't get good at anything until I started doing it. And I've I've never been a big research person. And so my goal has always just been like, step on the gas and go and make turns as you need to. And you'll get there. Is there anything, you know, from aside from the business side of things that sort of drives you, you know, on a daily basis in terms of, you know, doing your job better, what you do for your mental health and all of these little things that, you know, come with running a company and being able to balance things? Is there anything out there that are some hobbies or anything that you do? Are you a reader? Are you a sports person or any of those things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I used to, and I'm trying to be again, a boundary setter when it comes to work.
Good.
If for the past 2 years, I feel like I've been really good at it. Like I don't work after five. I don't work on weekends. I've been really strict with those type of boundaries. But since we had to downsize to kind of be able to scale up, I realized that I've taken on a lot more. And now all of a sudden, I'm starting to work around 8 a.m. and I start to finish around 6 p.m. And then sometimes I'll check my email at 8 p.m. and sometimes I'll check it on the weekends. And I've started to lose my boundaries that I've set, that I worked so hard to set. And so now I'm trying to find that equilibrium of balance once more. I actually literally just talked to my therapist about this yesterday. And it's something that's important to me. With that said, in terms of like how do I do that? I'm not like a hobbyist. I work, the best way to put this is I had a best friend who told me it just so happens that work is your hobby. And that's an incredibly lucky and privileged place to be. But that is like I love working. And so beyond that, I'm not somebody that's like, oh, I, do this specific activity. Although I am a big reader, I'm a speed reader though, so I only do it when I'm on vacation. But otherwise, just trying to spend time with, my partner, with our dog, trying to make time for friends. Like, well, I'm having a dinner party tonight.
Oh,
You
nice.
know, just trying to not live for the weekends. That's really something I'm trying to embody, where I'm trying to do more during the week to not just like wait for the next vacation, wait for the weekend, wait until to be happy. I'm trying to find happiness on a day-to-day basis. But again, like I feel like I've let that slip, and so now it's just a trying to force myself to go back to the good habits I had built.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I think for me, I've had to make some of those changes myself over the past few years, or even past, I'd say even past few months, I would say more than anything is like just journaling and really putting things down, thoughts down on paper and being able to get back to them and just kind of distilling everything that's going through my head because I've a lot of different things going on. And so sometimes it just gets to be one of these things where you have to just take a little step back, zoom out, find that little balance. Being able to take a 30-minute nap throughout the day sometimes is the best thing that I can absolutely do for myself. So, no, that's really, really awesome. Is there, I don't see too much of it. I guess I see a little bit, but are you doing a lot more stuff like on social media and Twitter and like writing a lot more on there and like exposing your brand a little bit? Or is that just kind of like, more of the personal side of things?
Sorry, is that for my personal stuff or for my or for Mojo stuff? Or
For both, I guess, are you sort of alongside building Mojo, are you building also more of like a personal brand where you're, kind of writing more
gotcha.
online and things? Yeah.
I'm trying. I am a millennial and I find it really uncomfortable to be in front of the camera, or to like hear my voice, like it's so uncomfortable for me. But I do understand, like I personally love when brand founders post about their brand. I follow them. I'm a diehard for certain brands, like, and I love that story. So I'm trying to do that, but it just feels really uncomfortable, and you kind of have to face these insecurities that you have about like how you look, how you sound, what you're wearing. The fact I'm like, I never wear makeup. Like I'm not wearing makeup now, during the day and stuff. And, but look, comparing myself, I guess, to these other brand founders, especially women, I'm just like, oh man, like I wish I looked better. I wish I was, a certain size. I wish all these things. And then I start doing the thing I talk about, don't not to do in terms of weight. I keep telling myself, I'm like, oh, I'll start posting more when, I've dropped a pant size, or I'll start posting more when when I'm wearing actual concealers during the day so I don't look sleep deprived. And so it's like I'm trying my best. I find that like Twitter is the better one for me personally, just because I get to like nobody's seeing me. It's just like my random thoughts. And but even then, I still get self-conscious about it. I find this is probably too much for the listeners, but my best tweets come from when I'm super high on cannabis. Then my inhibitions are lowered, and I'm like, wow, that's a great idea for the company, And then I'll post and tweet about it. And then like I'll check when I'm sober. I'm like, oh man, that was a good idea. But I can't really do that on TikTok or something. So I'm still trying to get more comfortable with it. That is one of my goals for 2023. I'm trying to put it off or push it off less. Like I'm trying to post more. My partner, actually, he's getting more into posting on TikTok for, he's really passionate about like cars and motorcycles. So he's doing these like how to change my car oil and all these things. And I'm just so inspired by it. I'm like, you don't feel any type of way about it. You're just like posting these things. He's getting so many views. And I'm just like, oh, I have to be less insecure and do this for my brand, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of back to the conversation about, you know, even starting it. There's never a better time to start than the now, like what you just said earlier. I think that goes alongside everything. I, for the longest time, and I've been, you know, in the entrepreneurial space for over 10 years at this point. And it wasn't until about 12 months ago, Stephanie, that I actually started posting online and just really putting my thoughts out there. I personally think just hearing your story right now and, like I said, giving it some light, which I'm sure you don't need at this, you know, you guys are growing and you're getting all the exposure that you can at this level. But I think when you start putting your thoughts on paper and you start pushing it out there, the good with the bad, the ugly, the terrible, the great, all of those things, that brings a little bit more personality, not only to you and to your brand, but I think that also trickles down into your products and anything else that you're doing. And the fact that you have an actual product that people can go purchase within that same minute, I think you'll start to see a lot more organic traffic and a lot more organic purchases come through. And not that you have to do it for that, it's just the way that it happens, obviously, online. You're gonna post.
I totally agree.
You know what I mean? So writing, even if before you get on the TikToks and, you know, all these other things, I would highly recommend doing as much writing as you can, even to the point where you may even start like a newsletter or whatever else it is, because there are a lot of crappy D2C founders out there that are just putting out bullshit that I know is bullshit, that are just not connected to that brand. They're just doing it for the views. And I feel like you have much more of a sincerity and an authenticity to you than most of these people. And surprisingly, through writing and the way people engage with you, they'll be able to see that. So I would highly recommend for somebody like yourself that has a creative, you're an extrovert. So at the end of the day, who really gives a fuck who doesn't like what you read? Move on to the next thing. Twitter is a fast moving timeline. What you post today, nobody's going to remember tomorrow. So I'm just letting you know, it would be to your benefit to do that, because I think you have an amazing story and a very unique product and sort of history of like what you've been doing. I think you would absolutely crush it on there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I really wanted to do this segment, but then I was just like, oh, liability purposes. For the month of January, I did our customer success. And so as a result of that, I got to see the bad, the good, the ugly of customer interactions. And I wanted to do like a segment on TikTok of like the most frustrating ones, when people are like, I ate all of the product, but I hated it. And now I want a refund. And I'm just like, so frustrating. But then again, I was just like, oh my God, what if that customer reaches out and gets mad at me for the content? And anyway, I definitely have to work on the overthinking aspect of creating content. But we'll see. Whoever's listening to this, see in a month or two, see where I'm at on my TikTok.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's awesome. I like I said, you have a fascinating story, and I'm really, really awesome to see what you guys are building. Is there anything else you want to chat about? I mean, we don't have a time frame on this. You know, we can go as long or as short as we need to, but I know you have stuff going on after this. So anything else you want to touch on that you think might be important from a personal perspective, business perspective, entrepreneurship, anything you want to share, a message you want to throw out there for people that might be listening? Absolutely anything. I'm completely open to carrying the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing for me, I'm like, for anybody listening, one, if you want to know something about me, I basically take any meeting ever. I had a mentor who kind of instilled that in me, where he would literally, like, anybody who reached out on LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever it may be, he just took the chat, and I do the same. So if anybody listening wants to talk about literally anything, like, just hit me up on any platform. I'm pretty much always down. And then the second thing being, one of the things I was talking about today with my team was the concept of when you target everybody, you target nobody. We were looking at starting a like different use case, you know, gummies, right? We have Mojo, okay. That's energy focused mood. Would we want to do something around sleep or relaxation or, you know, all these other things? And the reason I mention this is if anybody has an opinion on it, like, please hit me up and tell me what it is. Because for me, I'm on one end, I'm like, oh, well, it'd be cool to, like, Mojo brings you up and then you have a different Mojo to bring you down at the end of the day, which I think is neat. But at the other type of, you know, thinking, maybe we want to just be energy type of products. Maybe it's a pre-workout. Focus. Maybe it's, you know, the libido gummy, things that make you go up. You know, and not conflict it with something that brings you down as well. And so that's what I'm currently kind of, you know, thinking about consistently until we make a decision. It's just, you know, how do you brand yourself and how do you make sure that customers don't get confused about what your purpose is?
Well, let me give you from an agency perspective. And we work with a lot of brands doing, you know, 5-10 million in revenue and all this other stuff. I would say one of the most effective ways of doing that is throw a survey at your current user base. Use something like Octane AI, which maybe you have it, maybe you haven't heard of it. It's basically your on-site survey when people come onto the website. Maybe after post-purchase, you just say, hey, do you have 5 seconds? For any existing customers, you can target specifically existing customers or send it in an email and say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. How do you feel about this? And I think you'll start to see at that point. And then if you have enough of a threshold where it's like, you know, 40% said no, but, you know, 60% said yes, then you sort of have like maybe a different layer. You say, okay, why do you want the stuff that brings you down rather than the energizing stuff or whatever that might be? I've seen some amazing case studies around this where, you know, to the point where there was an eyelash company that had absolutely no idea about their customer base, and I think they said it was like 80% of their customers had never bought fake eyelashes, and they thought that they were basically sending it to exist like people that already knew what they were doing. And so sometimes you'll just be very surprised about what people tell you. So it's worth it. You're not making a huge financial decision at that point. And I think just knowing that you're involving that community, the people that have already purchased from you, people that might be purchasing from you, and just getting sort of that pulse on, hey, is this something that we should be doing? Because at the end of the day, you can run that survey every time you get an extra 100 customers, you run it again, and you see what ends up being over a span of 6 months. And maybe that's your decision right there. And you say, hey, most people want this, and kind of go from there. So that's just one piece of advice I would say if you want to try to see what actually, without over conflicting yourself and going crazy about it.
No, absolutely. That's exactly. So we did something similar, and like bringing you down is something people definitely want to do. But I always think of the concept of just like you want, like people like products for niches, the same way that like people go to Instagram, not really for reels, although it is growing, but they go for the photos, they go to TikTok for video content, they go like you go to your specific thing for like a specific subset of something. I try to think of it that way, but yeah, you're right. Like we have asked our customers, they do like the concept of something to bring you down or to relax. So I don't know, TBD was Q4.
Maybe this is just another brand for you. Maybe you have the up brand and the down brand and you come have a completely
maybe,
different.
Yeah. Like, it's super expensive to build a website, but you know, after you do that, then it's easy rolling.
Exactly. No, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to know how that goes and what you guys decide to do. I definitely myself will end up purchasing some of the product. I haven't yet, but I definitely will. I know my girlfriend also has been a big, she's been wanting to try some of that stuff, and just regular mushrooms and different things. Always it's hard to kind of gauge the microdosing and all this other stuff. So I'm really interested to see how your product, you know, does for her and stuff like that. So you'll definitely get my feedback. But this has been awesome, Stephanie. Just want to say what you said to the point of like, you take every meeting. I can vouch for that. I reached out to you out of absolutely nowhere and was just like, hey, cool brand, cool story. I want to chat with you if you're willing to come onto the podcast, and you within minutes you replied. So I just want to say thank you. It goes a long way. And you know, we're going to do whatever we can to, you know, promote the brand and push this out there. And I'll definitely let you know when the episode drops. It'll be probably a couple of weeks out from now. But I just want to say thank you for being on and bringing good energy and being awesome. And so If you ever want to come back, the door is open. It's an open door policy here coming back. So yeah, just let people know where, I guess, they can find you personally, where they can find your brand and anything else that you want to, plug.
For sure. One thing I will mention when you try Mojo, if you are a caffeine fan, I would suggest getting our extra strength and starting with 1 to 2 gummies on an empty stomach. So just something to note. If you're like sensitive to caffeine or stimulants, try the regular strength first.
Okay, perfect. Good to know. Thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. And thank you so much for having me. It's been great. I love the chat. In terms of where people can find me, basically steph.psych, Steph with an F. Not a PH. Steph.psych or underscore psych is basically my username, handle, whatever, on any platform. So that's how you can find me.
Awesome. And her brand is Mojo Microdose, and then there's also Guella, and I'm sure you can find it, like you said, across Urban Outfitters and a bunch of other retail places soon, I'm assuming. So thank you so much, Stephanie. Thanks for being on, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, you made it to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for tuning into What Is My Brain podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you got some value out of it. Make sure you hit the subscribe button or the follow button to get notified when new episodes are live. I'm out. Thank you.